जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाचार्य गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा, आई एम रियली सॉरी, आई हैड सम जूम इश्यूज, टाइम एंड अगेन इट कीप्स पॉपिंग, सो आई हैड टू ड्रॉप आउट एंड रीजॉइन आफ्टर रीस्टार्टिंग द लैपटॉप, दैट्स व्हाई इट टुक सम time. I apologize for the delay. Anyway, so we have been discussing from Bhaktya Loka, in which we have been discussing the ninth essay on dhairya. So utsahan nischayat dhairyat tattat karma pravartanat sangatyagat sato vritte shadbir bhaktir kasidyati. So the sixth things which are favorable for one's devotional service, we have been discussing on that theme. So in that, we saw that one of the meanings of dhairya means to resist the six as. So in that, we have already discussed about vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, etc. So last week we discussed jihva vegam, udara vegam, and upastha vegam. So I'll do a quick recap of what we saw and then we will move forward from there. So jihva vegam, we saw that, you know, we have different six kinds of taste like chewing, sucking and etc. So we have to actually resist the urge of the tongue to eat very palatable foodstuffs. So our tongue keeps running here and there wanting to eat things, many which are not very favorable for Krishna consciousness also. So, the more the tongue eats, the more its hankering increases. So, it is ati lobhomai. It is said to be very, very greedy. So, the more you eat something which is very tasty, the more you want to eat again and again. So, for those who wander for the pleasure of the tongue, Krishna, attaining Krishna is very difficult. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, jihvara lalasa yei iti uti dai shishnodara parayana krishna nahi pai. Whoever, due to the greed of the tongue, goes here and there despite the tongue, he will eventually become completely subservient to his belly and genitals also, and subsequently he will not be able to attain Krishna. So therefore, one has to really endeavor to actually overcome the urge of the tongue. And one of the very powerful ways of controlling the urge of the tongue is, you know, while we are honoring prasadam, you know, to very consciously chant the prasadam prayers, because it's a very, very deep prayer. So, Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave Swalpa Punya Vatam Rajan Vishwasone Vajayate. Now, how rare it is to for someone to even understand the glories of Mahaprasadam. It says Mahaprasade Swalpa Punya Vatam. For those who have very meager sukriti, which is insufficient to mature into faith and devotional service, for such people, they cannot have faith in Mahaprasad. And the Supreme Personality of God, Govinde, Nama Brahmani, they cannot have faith in the transcendental nature of the holy name. Vaishnave, they cannot have faith in the Vaishnavas. They won't think that the Vaishnavas are special people. Swalpa punyavatam rajan vishwasone vajayate. So for with meager sukriti, they cannot understand the glories of these personalities. Sharira avidya jal, you know, our whole body is a net of ignorance. शरीर अविद्या जाल जडेन्द्रिय ताहे काल एंड दीज सेंसेस आर द ग्रेटेस्ट एनिमीज. जडेन्द्रिय ताहे काल शरीर अविद्या जाल जडेन्द्रिय ताहे काल जिह्वे फेले विषय सागरे एंड दिस टंग you know is burning us portion of material existence. Jive phele vishe sagare, I mean it the senses actually drown the living entities in the samsara. What is that verse? Vayur navam ivambasi. What is that verse? Vayur navam ivambasi verse. Anyone remembers that even one of the sense when it is not focused can carry a person away, and that unfocused sense pulls the mind pulls the intelligence and the living entity drowns. What is that verse? My memory has become very weak. Oh, okay. If anyone remembers, just let me know. It's almost at the tongue, but I'm not able to remember it. Anyways, so that indriyanam hi charatam yanmano anuvidiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur namam yavambasi. Okay, that is the verse. Indriyanam hi charatam, even one of the senses which is not controlled, it will run after the sense objects. Then uncontrolled sense will pull the mind, that uncontrolled mind will pull the intelligence. In this way it will be, the living entity will be doomed. Jive phele vishaya sagare taramadya jiva, of all the senses the most difficult and dangerous is the tongue. Taram jihva ati lobho mai, which is very very greedy. So we have to understand that we are being controlled by an enemy, greedy enemy. Taramadya jihva ati lobho mai sudurmati. So durmati means it is very very crooked. The tongue is very crooked, always scheming. Take jeta katina samsare. In this world, to gain victory over the tongue is very very difficult. Take jeta katina samsare, but Krishna bada dayamay. But Krishna is very very merciful. Korivare jihva jaye, and he can help us gain victory over the tongue. Swa prasadanna dilobai. So he has given, in order to control this tongue, he has given his own remnants in the form of prasadam. Swa prasadanna dilobai. Say annamrita pav, and please accept that nectarian remnants of Krishna, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gunagav, and sing the glories of Radha and Krishna. Preme dako Shri Chaitanya Nitai, and with love call out the names of Shri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu. Preme dako Shri Chaitanya Nitai. So, like that, you know, if we consciously chant, it's a very very deep prayer actually. So then we will develop the right attitude, prasadam. Then we develop the right mood to honor prasadam and not devour prasadam. I mean, it's all we need to do is to become little conscious. That's very, you know, so Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna in whatever we do. And honoring prasadam is such a pivotal act. So it's very important actually. So that is about jihva vim that we saw last week. And udara vegam is the urge of the belly. While the urge of the tongue is to eat palatable food stuff, urge of the belly is to overeat. Okay. So essentially we have to offer Krishna food in the mode of goodness and honoring them as prasadam. Then the tongue is satisfied and Krishna and service to Krishna is cultivated. So if palatable prasad is easily available, then the tongue's greed will gradually be controlled rather than increased. If palatable prasadam, also in prasadam, you know, I'm not very sure if we did discuss this last time. Who prepares that prasadam is very important. You know, see, initially we should try to eat only prasadam, but later the consciousness of preparing that prasadam is very important actually. Of course, progress more and more, definitely our standards should increase. And actually, something prasadam which is prepared with great love is very satisfying to the soul, the tongue and the belly actually. It subdues the urge of tongue, belly, genitals, all three. I remember very vividly, which I heard maybe close to 15 years back, His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Maharaj had shared that how during the month of Kartik, which is coming very soon, next week is, Kartik is starting in another 4 days. Today is what? It's 9th Kartik is starting. So every Kartik, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Maharaj, many years back he used to teach at VIHE some courses. So during that time, His Grace Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu was still there. And he used to cook, very, very wonderful devotee. He was the cook of Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar. So he used to cook prasadam, cook bhoga for the Lord. And he used to save some Mahaprasad for Maharaj. So, during Kartik, Maharaj used to take only one time prasam in the afternoon. So, when Maharaj used to go, he used to get one small cup of rice, two chapatis, one small cup of sabji, and one small cup of dal. That's all, something like that. Very little, you know, it's something to definitely, it's not even good enough for one meal. And he used to take only one meal the whole day. And Maharaj used to tell, this is generally not sufficient for me, but because it was prepared with such a loving consciousness, with so much devotion, I used to eat it and it used to completely satisfy my soul, tongue and belly. And you know, whole day he said, I never used to feel tired or hungry or dissatisfied. So the consciousness of preparing the prasadam is also actually very, very important. The most ideal thing is to grow for Krishna, to harvest for the pleasure of Krishna, to cook for the pleasure of Krishna, to offer for the pleasure of Krishna, and honor for the pleasure of Krishna. This is ideal. But we have to try to as close to ideal as possible, actually. So, anyways, so we were discussing on this. So, the urge of the belly is a disturbance. The requirement of the stomach is to eat for the maintenance of the life and mitigation of hunger. So, ideally, this is very important. I struggle to do it. You know, as Prabhupada said, half the stomach should be food 1/4 stomach should be water and 1/4 should be left for air circulation. Yeah, but this is very, so this is very, very important. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, those who are thirsty for devotional service should maintain their life by moderate eating. Mitha book. Those who endeavor to overeat are called gluttons. One of the qualities of devotees is mitha book, eating what is necessary. So by eating less, the body remains healthy and does not disturb one's devotional service. And those who have no strength to tolerate the urge of the stomach are always greedy to eat. So, but even though one may have greed to eat, if they are firmly convinced that I will eat only Krishna Prasad, then slowly the urge of the belly will also be controlled. And on top of that, what is suggested is to fast on the prescribed days like Ekadashi, like tomorrow is Ekadashi, like that. So then we discussed about Upastavegam, the urge of the genitals. This is a very formidable urge. So he says that even this is for conditioned souls, this is a natural inclination for sex, meat eating and intoxication. So therefore, religious scriptures never actually encourage such activities. So therefore, in conditioned state, naturally the urge to associate with the opposite sex is very natural. So to minimize this inclination, marriage is recommended. But if those who want to indulge or associate with the opposite sex outside marriage are like animals, so then he says, but those who have crossed beyond the rules of this natural inclination, for those who have become self-realized, or those who have reached a very exalted state of devotional service, and those who are not at all troubled by that inclination to associate with the objects on the strength of the association of devotee practice of devotional service, for them this urge associate with the opposite sex is very insignificant. But for persons who are filled with attachment for material enjoyment, they can never tolerate the urge of the genital. It's very difficult. Because great desire for material enjoyment is a symptom of Rajoguna. And if Rajoguna is in abundance, then there will be all symptoms of Rajoguna, and one of the most powerful symptoms of Rajoguna is excessive attachment to the opposite sex. So, and if there is and when it becomes too much, then it leads to illicit activities actually. And then he says that there are two categories of people. One is Grihatyagi and Grihastha. So the Grihatyagi is one who has already reached the stage of Bhava and Prema. They are perfected Vaishnavas. So for them, this attraction for the opposite sex has been completely defied by the strength of Sadhu Sangha. So they are renounced Vaishnavas. But those who have propensity to associate with women, they accept the codes of marriage and remain as householders. So, like that. So then we saw that to subdue these six urges is called as dhairya. And in this context, we did this exercise where we listed down these six urges, and we all together list down what all we could do to actually practically subdue these six urges, because that is how you cultivate dhairya. So I will quickly go over the list, because this is our practical take home from this whole discussion on dhairya. Regarding vachovegam, how we can control the urge to speak, I will quickly read. you know, speak only things related to Krishna, chant the holy names, proper time management by filling free time with Krishna conscious engagement. So there should be no free time slots. You know, if Krishna conscious engagement is filled, then there is no free time for useless talk. Stay away from social media, stay away from internet. Practice talking only when necessary. As a practice, glorify Vaishnavas in Sangha. That way, you know, one of the worst forms of, you know, prajalpa in the form of criticizing Vaishnavas will be curbed. Stay away from people, places, etc., situations which might induce the urge to speak, which means stay away from prajalpa triggers. You know, this is something that we discussed. How do you control the urge of the mind? We saw favorable engagement of senses in Krishna's service, because the senses feed the mind with favorable or unfavorable impressions. So if the senses are favorable impressions, favorable engagement, then the mind has favorable impressions to engage in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, one of the most powerful ways of controlling the urge of the mind is to give favorable engagement to the senses. Second is regular. If life is second, mind will not run away here and there. Because one after next, after next, after next, after next, if the whole day is engaged, then the mind gets calm. So, you know, prayers and bhajans of the acharyas is very, very powerful to subdue the mind. Cultivating spiritual knowledge diligently is certainly a powerful way of controlling the urge of mind. Eating sattvic prasadam will certainly not agitate the mind, and it will keep the mind more subdued and calm. Endeavor to chant attentively. Endeavor for good quality morning program in the association of the devotees, and restricted use of internet. This is very important. This is applied to all. Right. Then the third urge, we discussed the urge of anger, krodha vegam. How do we control? Again, prayers, pray, learn to forgive, learn to keep quiet, because many times when we start speaking, it agitates the other person, it agitates us, and then there is back and forth, and then it aggravates the whole, relationship. Avoid unnecessary expectations, because expectations are the main reasons why it leads to anger when it is unfulfilled. Learn to pause before acting, because many times we can't afford to just keep acting impulsively. We have to pause and then act. You have to be philosophically sound. Yeah, sometimes we tend to become very much irritable if we don't get sufficient sleep. And then another practical point was avoid getting overly hungry, because when we become overly hungry, increases and pitta increases, anger also increases. And the another point that we saw was meditate on the dangers of exhibiting anger, how it has the potential to ruin our devotional service. And again, stay away from anger triggers, very important. Then we discussed about how do we overcome the urge of the tongue, jihva vegam. Eat only prasad. Learn to cook tasty prasad so you don't hanker for tasty food outside the realm of prasadam. Stay away from the triggers. This is very important. Avoid non-devotee association, because they will sort of remove your guilt of eating non-prasadam. And generally, while we are on long travel, that is the time when we are forced to eat lot of non-prasadam. So we have to plan properly, cook lot of dry prasadam, and see what are the options, what kind of food that we can eat, making it is very simple, and you can sort of avoid eating non-prasadam even when we are traveling. Then we discussed about udara vegam, so controlling the urge of the belly. So try to practice, eating half stomach, 1/4 with water and 1/4 with air. you know, learn to fast on festival days. Another thing is eat quietly. So eat quietly while focusing on what we are doing. Otherwise, when we are focused on speaking here and there, then without our attention, lot of food we may end up consuming. Eat with others so that there will be some guilt of overeating. So we have to learn to eat right and try to understand the need of the body scientifically and eat accordingly. And another thing that was suggested was carry some snack prasadam in hand, because when you feel hungry, you won't get tempted to eat non-prasadam. Then upastha vegam, how do you control the urge of the genitals? So again, the most important thing, avoid triggers, avoid associating with unholy association, be very cautious with internet, and create proper accountability systems. There is proper fence around us. Maintain healthy relationships and friendships, because many times this when we don't have healthy, loving, nourishing friendships, it leads to boredom, and boredom pushes us in the direction of, you know, these kind of unholy directions. We have to learn to maintain strict sadhana. We have to learn to share our struggles in confidence with mature, affectionate senior devotees and seek help. Prayers, very important. Serving the Vaishnava is a very powerful way of removing this desire. Avoid previous unhealthy relationships. You know, try to avoid, if there have been previous unhealthy relationships, then we have to consciously avoid it, because it can trigger. So this was a very good exercise that we did, you know, very powerful take homes, directly applicable principles. Otherwise, this will remain, all these six things will remain theory. Exercise. So then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when one properly tolerates the above mentioned six urges, then that is favorable for his devotional service. So there should be an endeavor to do this. And when those urges are strong, that is unfavorable one for one's devotional service. So to subdue these six urges is called as dhairya. As long as one has material body, these propensities cannot be totally uprooted. But we have to learn to engage them appropriately. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes this principle of Narottam Das Thakur. Kama Krishna Karmarpane Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane Lobas Sange Harikata Moha Ishtalabha Vine Mada Krishna Gunagane Niyukta Kariba Yata Tata. Like that. So of course we should understand that it is not exactly dovetailing, because all these principles are mostly Rajoguni and Tamoguni Anarthas. Rajoguni, Tamoguni Anarthas cannot be dovetailed. So he is not exactly talking about dovetailing. What he is telling is, you know, these are all emotions, natural emotions, and emotions keep a person very vibrant. So what Srila Narottam Das Thakur is suggesting is that at the stage of spiritual perfection, the stage of spiritual perfection is not devoid of emotions. It is very rich with vibrant emotions. So that is, it's supposed to be an encouragement to pursue devotional service, because at the stage of perfection, the stage of perfection of devotional service is very rich with emotions. So that should encourage a person to pursue devotional service like that. Okay. So this is where we ended our discussion last time. So now Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to discuss another meaning of dhairya, which means patience. He will speak briefly about it. Then we will discuss Srila Prabhupada mentions briefly in the crop inspection about dhairya, which is about two slides. And then we will discuss Srila Bhakti Rakshak Siddhar Swami Maharaj's commentary on dhairya. So hopefully, let's see how much we can complete today. But before we start this discussion on how dhairya also means patience, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add based on what we discussed last week or what we have summarized today, we will discuss for a while and then start today's discussion. Anything anyone would like to share as add, you may please go ahead. Okay, if there is none, then we will continue our discussion. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that dhairya also means patience. There is another meaning applicable to the word dhairya. Those who engage in sadhana desire to attain the results. Karmis hope to attain heavenly happiness by fruitive activities. Jnanis hope to attain liberation by speculative knowledge. And devotees hope to please Krishna by their devotion. Being impatient to prolong sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his goal attains the result only when he becomes patient. So patience is very important. Because one of the main reasons for impatience, there are two main reasons for impatience. Okay. So there are two main reasons for impatience. One is a sense of entitlement or pride. Impatience is a symptom of pride. It could be in anything, in a relationship or in one's sadhana, in devotional service. So if we are impatient, it indicates a sense of entitlement in the practitioner, a sense of I deserve it. When we feel I deserve it fast, I deserve it immediately, then when it takes time, we feel impatient. Okay, so one of the reasons of impatience is pride, arrogance, a sense of entitlement. And another reason of entitlement, another reason for impatience is lack of sambandha or lack of knowledge about when to expect what in devotional service. I'll give you an example. In the early days of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada had very, very early days, the earliest disciples of Srila Prabhupada had not even been initiated actually. I think it was Gargamuni Prabhu at that time. Or was it Hayagriva Prabhu? One of the, maybe it was Gargamuni Prabhu or Umapati Maharaj, one of the two. So they had been chanting for maybe a few weeks, and one of them approached Srila Prabhupada, and he told Prabhupada that Swamiji, you told that by chanting I can develop love for Krishna. Well, I have been chanting for a long time. For the last few weeks, I have been chanting, but I still have not developed any love for Krishna. So Prabhupada started laughing. And then he said, keep chanting, it will come. So like that. So here, he was seemingly getting little impatient because he had a false idea of, you know, chant, I will get love of God. You know, he had a false idea of, you know, how much chanting will lead to love of God. You know, so he thought, I had chanted for a long, you know, for a few weeks I have chanted, I still have not developed love of God. You know, like that he was thinking. So, so therefore, another reason for impatience is that we are not very clear about when to expect what in Krishna consciousness. When that is not very clear, we may have unrealistic expectation, unrealistic expectation of results in Krishna consciousness. And when we don't get it according to our expectations, then it leads to a sense of impatience. So therefore, it is very, very important to understand when we can expect, what to expect by practice of Krishna consciousness, and when to expect those results in our practice of Krishna consciousness, and what quality of sadhana will actually generate, what quality of sadhana will actually generate those results. And apart from that, what are the other favorable things that I should do and unfavorable things that I should avoid so that these results come fast enough. Otherwise, you know, one may think that, oh, I am also chanting. Why am I not developing love for Krishna? Well, how is your chanting? Attentive? Are you trying to avoid the 10 offenses? For how long have you been chanting? Are you doing the do's? Are you avoiding the don'ts? All these things are there. So if these things are not very clear, then we may end up having unrealistic expectations from our unrealistic expectation of results, and that can potentially lead to impatience. And impatience, when it continues over a long period of time, it can lead to loss of faith in the process. So therefore, it's very important that if I am impatient in Krishna consciousness, they have to see if it is due to a sense of entitlement or pride, or if it is due to insufficient knowledge about when to expect what in my practice of devotional service. Right? So here he says, being impatient due to prolonged sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his attains that result only when he becomes patient. So Krishna must be merciful to me either today or after 100 years or in some other birth. I will take shelter of his lotus feet with determination and never leave. We see this in the times of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the Mahaprakash Leela, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls and bestows mercy upon practically all of his followers, but he somehow doesn't call Mukunda at all, and all the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they become very concerned for Mukunda. How come Prabhu has not called Mukunda to bestow his mercy upon Mukunda? So Mahaprabhu, what about Mukunda? Did you forget Mukunda? So he said, Mukunda? No, you know, this Mukunda is such a, he sometimes, whenever there is proper Krishna Katha happening between the Vaishnavas, he goes and sits there. And sometimes when there is some Mayavadi discussing some Mayavad philosophy, he goes there and humbly hears from there also. So in this way, this Mukunda, by hearing Krishna Katha, sometimes he embraces me, and sometimes by hearing this Mayavad, he takes a stick and beats me up, beats me. So I will not show, so he says that I will show mercy to this Mukunda only after 100 lifetimes. So in anger, he speaks like this. And Mukunda, who was there hearing this, he starts jumping in great joy and shouting, I will get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So even though it may be after 100 lifetimes, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did say that I will give it after 100 lifetimes. So this actually melted the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he embraced Mukunda and gave him mercy. So this is willingness to wait. Willingness to wait for the mercy for 100 lifetimes. So this is a case of zero pride and zero sense of entitlement. And there is only gratitude that even after 100 lifetimes, if I have to receive it, I don't deserve it. Even after 100 lifetimes, I can get it only because of mercy. So if I am getting mercy after 100 lifetimes, then I have to be grateful like that. So this type of dhairya, patience, is most desirable for the practitioners of devotional service. Many times, even in relationships, we don't have this patience, actually. You know, when the other person needs some time, we may not be willing to give that time, you know, especially when there is a strained relationship. When one party is hurt, so, and they may need some time to gradually overcome their hurt feelings. But the other person may feel like, you know, what the hell, you know, why is he not talking, you know, or he should be talking. I am taking all endeavors to talk and he should be talking to me. But maybe the other person needs some time to process all the negativities, the hurt feelings, and sort of purge them out of the heart. It needs some time. But we may feel, we may have a sense of entitlement that, no, how is this possible? You know, I am taking all the efforts to fix. The person is not taking the efforts to fix. Well, you may be taking the effort to fix the relationship by speaking, whereas the other person may be taking efforts to fix the same relationship by keeping quiet for a while, because, you know, different people have different needs. But many times, when we are unwilling to understand the other person's needs, when we have a strong sense of entitlement, you know, even in relationships, we may act very, very impatiently, actually, not giving the other person the time he needs. You know, it can actually cause serious problems. So patience is a very, very important virtue. If we can develop that virtue of patience, of course, to develop the virtue of patience needs a lot of sattva-guna. But even if we may not have that level of sattva-guna, at least we should definitely end up to act patiently, understanding that, you know, impatience will spoil that endeavor. So, because I don't want my endeavor to get spoiled, I will be patient. So here, we have not developed the virtue of patience, but just that because of our appreciation and appreciation for the goal that we are striving for, we choose to act in a patient way, like that. So this brings us to the end of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur's commentary on Dhairya. This is the end of his essay in Bhaktialoka. So next we will discuss Srila Prabhupada's commentary in Nectar of Instruction on Dhairya. Before we start that discussion, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead. Anything? Any to share? Okay. If there is none, then we will continue our discussion. Okay, so we will discuss about Srila Prabhupada's comments on this principle of Dhairya. Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, these activities must be executed with patience. One should not be impatient in Krishna consciousness. Indeed, this Krishna consciousness movement was started single-handedly, and in the beginning there was no response. But because we continued to execute our devotional activities with patience, people gradually began to understand the importance of this movement and they are eagerly participating. So Prabhupada is giving his own example. Initially I was single-handedly trying to do everything, but no one was coming, but I was patient. I was patiently executing my duties, and now slowly and gradually people are coming and they are eagerly participating. One should not be impatient in discharging devotional service, but should take instructions from the spiritual master and execute them with patience, depending on the mercy of Guru and Father. So the successful execution of Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious activities requires both patience and confidence. Actually, enthusiasm, patience and confidence, these three are such important principles actually. So we should be enthusiastic, but then we should be tempered with patience. Enthusiastic to act, enthusiastic to do our part, but patient when it comes to expecting the results. And at the same time, diligent to keep resolving the doubts, so that there is confidence in our endeavor to practice Krishna consciousness. These three are very, very important. These three principles are very important. Enthusiasm to execute, patience when it comes to expecting the results, and at the same time, resolving the doubts diligently to actually maintain confidence to practice, confidence in the path of devotional service. So if you are careful in nurturing and cultivating these three principles, you know, then devotional service will be very, very powerfully executed. You know, it would be very wonderful. So here, Srila Prabhupada says, a newly married girl naturally expects offspring from her husband, but she cannot expect to have them immediately after marriage. So this is the classic case of unrealistic expectation. Classic case of unrealistic expectations. Okay. So you do not know how long after marriage one will get child. So if someone thinks that I got married and by getting married one becomes a mother, but not the next day or next week, it will take at least a year or so, right? Of course, as soon as she is married, she can attempt to get a child, but she must surrender to her husband, confident that her child will develop and be born in due time. So in this way, it's very important that one develops patience. Of course, knowledge is very important to develop patience. Knowledge. So when one should have knowledge and humility. Knowledge and humility will lead to patience. So humility will subdue the impatience which is born out of the sense of entitlement and pride. And knowledge will subdue the lack of patience which is born out of an improper understanding of when to expect what. So with proper humility and proper knowledge, one can develop patience. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions on what Shilpad has mentioned or whatever we have discussed today? Anything anyone would like to share? Yes, Mother Gail.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. I think in this verse, Rupa Goswami mentions patience, enthusiasm, and determination. So is determination also a translation of dharya?
Determination is nishchaya. So confidence is nishchaya. Confidence is nishchaya, or and dhairya is patience actually. What does Srila Rupa Goswami say? Enthusiasm. What are the three things that you mentioned?
He says patience, enthusiasm, and determination.
Yeah, determination is confidence. So you can endeavor with determination or confidence only if you are free from doubts. So determination is nishchaya, the second principle which we have already discussed.
Okay, determination is nishchaya.
Yeah.
Or to endeavor with
confidence.
Determination is, or confident. Okay, so to endeavor with determination and confidence, those things are synonymous. Huh?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. And then dharya can be translated as either patience or
controlling the six urges.
Yeah, or controlling the urges. Okay. Thank you.
Right. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask, add before we move ahead? Okay, let's continue then. Let's discuss Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj's comments on dhairya. Maharaj says, we should not think that our path will be very smooth. So many troubles may come from outside. In India, when you go streets with the Kirtan party, so many may come and say, you monkeys, Lal Bandar, you red-faced monkeys, these things must come to you from so many directions, in so many forms of hindrances and opposition. They will come and try to affect you, to dissuade you from this path. But Tarorapi Sahishnuna. The example of a tree is given and that is analyzed. If somebody does not pour any water, the tree does not say, oh, give me some water. If anyone is coming and disturbing, snatching the leaves, cutting the branches, or even cutting the whole thing, the tree is silent. No opposition. We should rather try to see that insults, poverty, punishment, and unfavorable dealings are all coming to purify me. So here Maharaj is explaining dhairya to mean a kind of tolerance to suffering which is born out of proper knowledge. What is that proper knowledge? All this thing is coming to purify me. Right? So tolerance is also a kind of, you can say, right? So you are patiently waiting. It's okay. I am suffering because of my own misdeeds. And the suffering will essentially purify me. So I can be patient. So, because it is not just mere sin, but behind that suffering is purification. Right? So therefore, that gives me the confidence to patiently wait and not be impatient for that suffering to go away. So in that sense, there is a correlation, very strong correlation between patience and tolerance, actually. So Maharaj says, these things are necessary, and with the least punishment, I am going to be released. Right? Because Krishna is involved. Krishna wants me to learn, so he may not release me from this punishment. But because he is most benevolent, he will give me as little punishment as it is necessary for me to learn my lesson. Not as much as I deserve due to my misdemeanor. So, therefore, that knowledge about Krishna's benevolence gives us the ability to tolerate and be patient. So, knowledge and internalizing that knowledge is very important for us to develop this tolerance and patience. So, I have become connected with the highest object of life. But what price am I paying for that? So, I want the highest goal to establish a relationship with Krishna. But what price am I willing to pay? What price? I am confident that I am going to attain the highest fulfillment of life. But what price is suffering for that? It is inconceivable. Whatever little demand comes to be exacted from you, with a smiling face, you have to accept that in consideration of your highest goal. So therefore we are suffering. So we understand, what do I get in return? If only I could tolerate this suffering, be patient, then in return, I get the mercy of Krishna and subsequently a relationship with Krishna. So therefore, this knowledge will definitely help us act in a more tolerant and patient way. So if you are really confident and you have faith in your brightest future, then whatever small price nature wants through these miscreants, that must be accepted. Are you confident that your future in Krishna consciousness is bright? I always remember one of my role models in Krishna consciousness is Mother Yamuna. You know, her life, I mean, for which I am deeply grateful to Tarani Mataji for compiling the biography of Yamuna Mataji. Of course, both of them, not just, you know, you cannot take Yamuna Mataji without Dintarani Mataji, and Dintarani Mataji without Yamuna Mataji. So Yamuna Mataji always used to say, you know, with full confidence, that my future is very bright. And so is your future. You have taken up to Krishna consciousness, your future is very bright. So, and she used to say that when someone used to, experience such an ecstatic deepship or ecstatic prasadam or ecstatic chanting or Bhagavatam discussion, and if someone gets very overwhelmed and they feel and they say that, no, it can't get better than this. And Yamuna Mataji used to get so serious and she would say, no, it would. Just wait and watch. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. So when, and this is truth. This is not wishful thinking, or this is not just a mental adjustment. This is not just some positive thinking, which, the self-help gurus suggest. This is reality. Because we are on the path to surrender to Krishna, the future is very bright. The future is very bright. And what is the price that I need to pay? So therefore, you see in the life of Yamuna Mataji, how much she extended herself physically, mentally, emotionally, extended to everyone, undergoing so much hardships. Why? Because she had full confidence that my future in Krishna consciousness is very bright. So whatever small price nature wants through these miscreants, that must be accepted. So submissiveness and modesty, that is the law of Mahaprabhu. So this comes from confidence that my future is bright. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena. These things must be repeatedly preached. This is very, very important actually. It's very important. Because our spiritual life is dependent on this. Our spiritual survival is dependent on this. Even if we have not developed these principles as a virtue, our spiritual survival depends on our acting according to the principles of humility, tolerance, respect, and no sense of entitlement. So when we act in this way, even though we may not feel this way, it saves our devotional service actually. Trinadapi sunichena means I must not be so rigid that I may not accommodate others. Tarorapi sahishnuna, if still someone is aggressive towards me, I shall try to treat. Why? Because my future is very bright. And the price that I need to pay for that bright future is just to tolerate a little bit. So then it becomes very trivial. And Amani, I must never insist on any fame from the environment. Still, I will always be ready to give honor to all. With this attitude, we should march our way. This maxim should be given a very broad circulation. Broad circulation. Preach this. Of course, we preach this by practicing it. As Saint Francis of Assisi says, that we preach always, and if there is a need, we may speak. We preach always, we preach all the time. But if there is a need, we may speak. So which means we preach by our actions. And sometimes we may choose to preach through our words also. But we preach primarily through our actions. So, to become a Vaishnava, we must be deceit-free and have discipline of this type. And this comes from none other than Mahaprabhu himself. Once we were told that our Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was doing Madhukari Bhiksha and was returning to his quarters. So he went to do Madhukari. So he was returning back. The people did not spare him either. The boys were pelting him with some small stones and he remarked, Krishna, you are cruelly dealing with me. I shall complain to Mother Yashoda about you. That was his outlook. Harmonized. You know, of course, we can't imitate that. When anything came and he would say, oh Krishna, by philosophical calculation, without you nothing can happen. You are with these children and you are disturbing me and I shall teach you a lesson. I know how to deal with you. In that way, he took everything like that. So he had nothing against those children. So, you are with these children, disturbing me through them. I know how to deal with you. So he saw everything in terms of his relationship with Krishna. Of course, we may not have that personal relationship with Krishna, but we can see that Krishna's sanction through the other person. Not that, so we deal with it in such a way that it does not disturb our devotional service. At least that much we can do. Krishna is saying, it's happening. But that does not mean that we have to sit and take. At least we respond in a way that the principles of Trinadapi Suni Chena Tarorapi Sahishna Amanina Manadena are not compromised. So without that, we can try to act without having to compromise those things. So that is our beacon light to adjust with things that are apparently unfavorable. That is our beacon light. To adjust with things which are apparently unfavorable. So, a sweet adjustment is there. Don't give any opposition. Still, opposition will come to disturb you and you must forbear. You will accept them in such a way. We should not create resistance for the environment. If there is some attack, some undesirable things come towards me, I am to forbear that to my utmost patience. I will patiently forbear. I am to silently tolerate. I won't harm. Why? Because this is a small price that I need to pay in order to establish a relationship with Krishna. Our attitude should be this. Whatever comes, this is earned by my previous karma. Here karma means misdemeanor. Law of karma. So because the word karma is used in multiple ways, right? My test karma has earned such an environment and it is a necessity to teach me. And whenever my teaching will finish, the environment will change. So, and who is teaching me? Krishna. Krishna wants to teach me a lesson. And whenever I have learned, as soon as I learned the lesson, the environment will change. So this understanding, tattenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvag vapurbir vidadan namaste jivetayo muktipade sadaya bha. So this will lead to patience, tolerance and patience. Whatever the circumstance, the environment may be undesirable, but if we are sincere, we must take it with a good motive, because the Lord has sent it. Because devotees, circumstances are created by Krishna, and Krishna is benevolent. Krishna does not want the devotee to fail. There is a potential in every situation that Krishna puts us. There is a potential to come closer to lotus feet. Just that we need to know, how do I respond to that situation in a graceful way, so that I make the full use. I make full use of it. It is like investing money. You have money in hand. When you invest, that money goes out of your hand. But if you invest it right, then you get double the money very soon, or triple the money very soon, depending on how intelligently you invest it. Even though for the time being, that you will lose that money from your hand. So suffering is like that. As when there is some when there is some construction work which is going on in the on the roads, they write temporary inconvenience for permanent convenience, right? Like that. Of course, there is no permanent convenience in this material world, but this is true temporary inconvenience for permanent convenience. Right. So good motive means with proper knowledge. Without a sanction, nothing can happen. Not even a straw can move. I am put in such an unfavorable environment. He is seeing this. He is seeing this thing. And as soon as this necessity ends, it will be removed and I shall be placed in another environment. As soon as I learn my lesson, or as soon as I learn whatever Krishna wants me to learn, immediately the situation will change, because Krishna is not doing me just to punish me. Krishna is doing me so that I can take one step to speed. And as soon as I take that one step, immediately that suffering will end. And then the next plan, Krishna's next plan will be executed. There is no error in his decision, because Krishna is omniscient, he is omnipotent, he is omnipresent, and he is omnibenevolent. In the divine decision, there cannot be any error. We have to face all circumstances with such an attitude. Tattenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvag vapurbir vidadan namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya paak. One who lives his life while joyfully seeing everything as your mercy, even as he experiences the adverse conditions arising from his past deeds, and constantly pays respects to you with his mind, body and words, is certain to attain your lotus feet, the object of all devotion. This is such an important verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. If only we can internalize it. If only we can completely internalize it and act according to this understanding. Then certainly this is patience actually. This will generate patience. Then we will not become impatient for our distress to go away. Because we see the benevolent hands of Krishna behind that. So when we see that, then the impatience is lost. Then the impatience is gone. We become patient. So trust. So these are all, in one sense, they are connected also. So confidence and patience, you know, they are all connected principles. The principles are very much connected. You know, when we feel confident in Krishna's presence, in Krishna's, then it leads to a sense of patience also. So, like that. It is our environment, our own past deeds. I must not quarrel with what my own deeds have produced, but I must finish this effect. When I finish it, then it is gone. My purification is accomplished. If I rebel, then it will get postponed and it will come back with interest. So it is necessary for me. And as soon as the necessity will be finished, it will be withdrawn and I will be put in another separate environment. Just give me a second. Oh, two more slides. We have to wait for the decision, the divine dispensation. That will be the highest policy. The most sacred, desirable and helpful policy is everywhere. It will increase our faith in the Supreme. The supreme command of all environments may come now or in the future. I have to learn to be patient. This policy of a devotee will be most suitable and helpful. There is no sense of entitlement. A sense of entitlement means Krishna. That is another implication. I know better than Krishna. I know what is best for me. Even better than Krishna. Krishna should not have put me in this situation. Right. Tattenu kampam susamikshamano. The undesirable things have not come suddenly to punish me, but it is necessarily self-acquired and it will get its fulfillment and then vanish. And then I shall get another chance. But if I avoid this, it may be finished for now, but again it will come to clear my debt. With this attitude, we should face all circumstances, and that will be the best attitude of any progressive devotee. This is patience. Patience comes from knowledge. Knowledge breeds patience. Ignorance breeds impatience. That brings us to the end of Shri Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj's commentary, and that brings us to the end of this whole discussion on dhairya, patience. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add before we move on to the next essay, which will be Tat Tat Karma Pravartana. Yes, Mother Gail.
Hey, Prabhu. You know, I would love to come away from this class feeling like my future is bright. But, you know, I am not of the stature of Mukunda Prabhu, who's like, you know, I've always heard he said, only 1 million births, only 1 million births, you know? And, you know, and, you know, at the way my, you know, when I think of my substandard sadhana and, you know, all the anarthas known and unknown, mm-hmm. that I have, you know, Even though I do have faith in Krishna's benevolent nature, I find it difficult to have faith in the bright future with all of the obstacles that I just mentioned. So,
yeah, but the acharyas are our saviors, you know, because they give us guidance to navigate every single situation that we may face. There is not a single situation that our Aryas have not foreseen, even though they themselves are eternally perfect souls, never ever having undergone the same kind of frailties and conditionings that we are going to. But they are perfectly cognizant to the very minute details of what we are going through. And they have given a solution for all that. So, just that if we take their shelter and try to apply these principles to whatever best possible is, sooner or later, our future is bright.
I guess I'm worried about the later part, not the sooner part.
I am struggling with lust. I'm struggling with anger, envy, greed, illusion, pride, with a desire for fame, glorification, all that. But still my future is bright because I'm going to work on them. I'm going to take help from the acharyas. I'm going to take help from the well-intentioned Vaishnavas. They will help me. And my future is bright. And most importantly, Krishna wants me to overcome. He is cheering me to overcome my situations. And if I take one step, he is willing to take 10 steps. So all I need to do is take one step, and Krishna's 10 steps are really big steps. So Krishna at every moment wants to help me out. In fact, he is plotting every single situation of mine to help me to actually make my future very bright. So it is Krishna's desire. You don't have a choice. Krishna has already deemed that your future shall be bright. You don't have a choice, actually.
Yeah, right now I'm thinking of Gita verse 9:22. So does this mean that, you know, even as long as you are sincerely trying, right? As long as you're sincerely trying, even if your sattva does not come to some perfectional stage, right? That
I'm sorry, I just lost your voice in between. Can you please repeat?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so does that verse mean that even if my sattva or anybody's sattva does not come to a perfected state, right? Mm-hmm. As long as Krishna is happy with our effort, mm-hmm. we can go back home in this life. I mean, this is Lord Chaitanya's era, you know? So,
yes.
Is that what it means?
What it means is, if you are sincere, then Krishna will get the right kind of environment and association for you to elevate your sadhana, perfect it, so that because one thing, Mataji, if before we are perfect, if we go back home, we will suffer there.
Yeah.
So Krishna will ensure that proportionate to our sincerity, Krishna will facilitate the right kind of association, kind of environment, so that we become more sincere, we become more committed, so that we become more ready to actually go to his abode. And when we are ready, Krishna will happily take us back. So, but prematurely taking us back will lead to our own suffering. So yes. Krishna will not do that.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true. Thank you, Guru.
Okay, there is one question in the chat box. I have faith on Krishna, but I doubt immediate people or devotees and see that they are manipulating Krishna's plan. Like this, I get slowly disconnected from Krishna from the situation. Oh. Yeah, but I can clearly see what you're talking about. I can clearly see what you're talking about. Can anyone manipulate Krishna's plan? Actually not. No one can manipulate Krishna's plan. Krishna has to sanction. So no one can manipulate Krishna's plan. But you have a choice to choose your association. You have a choice to choose your association. That is always there. And that is a part of Krishna's plan. By Krishna may present before you multiple choice of association. Not that the person with the unfavorable association, the person who is supposed to be your unfavorable associate is manipulating Krishna's plan. Maybe it is Krishna's plan by giving you that choice, and he is allowing us to decide, okay, what do you do in this situation? So the other person is perfectly acting according to Krishna's plan. He's not manipulating Krishna's plan. He's perfectly acting. Us to choose at that stage, what do I do now? Do I take his association or not? Okay. So therefore, the choice is always there with the sadhaka to choose wisely. The association. So no one can manipulate Krishna's plan, including devotees. Devotees out of their love can change Krishna's plan, but not in an evil way. If Krishna has decided, he is so crooked, I will not give him mercy. If a devotee prays for that person, Krishna may change his plan. So that way the devotee can manipulate Krishna's plan, but never in a way that will be non-conducive for us. But Krishna may want to beat us and delay our progress in devotional service. But if a devotee favorably prays for us, Krishna, that devotee may manipulate Krishna's plan, but not otherwise. So, is that relevant, Hari Prasad? So, I don't know if it made sense. Okay. Krishna Naam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes.
It's a fact that every situation is forced on us, and we have to helplessly accept the situation. There's no point denying it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, generally everyone tries to circumvent the situation or try to maneuver through the situation and try to find some alternate routes of escape. And when we meet with again failure, then we give that up and then again try something else. This is the general tendency even for devotees like me. So we try to somehow escape from that situation. The other extreme is just to take everything as Krishna's plan and simply keep quiet. That is just being helpless and simply accept whatever happened, let it happen. That also seems to be an extreme situation. So we can't, if we just keep quiet, it may become even worse. People may, if somebody is dumb and doesn't react, people may take more advantage, like in the case of Jada Bharata, how they threw stones and all that. So that way we'll get into more and more difficulty. So what is the ideal way we have to deal with such situations?
Well, see, first thing is we have to have the confidence that Krishna is orchestrating the situation for me. So, but that does not mean that I should not react to that situation. I should not, that does not mean I should not react to that situation. But Krishna wants me to react in a way that will make Krishna happy. So, and react in a way which is in accordance to our accordance to our level of advancement and our level of tolerance, which is proportional to our level of advancement. So, for example, if I get a particular disease, if I get a particular disease and I am suffering, so should a devotee just accept it by thinking that Krishna has given it, I should just tolerate? Yeah, if he is able to tolerate without compromising his Krishna conscious activities, he should tolerate. But if he is unable to tolerate, then he should respond to that situation in a way that will save his spiritual life. That will save his spiritual life. So, therefore, for example, if someone is walking on the road and on the opposite side, a vehicle has lost balance and it's coming to try, coming, veering towards him and it's going to hit him, should take that, oh, Krishna wants me to get hit by this bike. No. Krishna wants you to respond to the situation in such a way that will be most conducive for your spiritual practice. So therefore, it's not, for example, if someone is in an unfavorable relationship. Okay. So does it mean that, oh, Krishna only has put me in this unfavorable relationship? Is it true? Yes, it is true. And does it mean that Krishna wants me to tolerate it? No, not necessarily. Krishna wants you to respond in a way that will be most conducive for your Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it may mean to just accept it and tolerate, and sometimes it may mean to try to circumvent it and sort of save your spiritual life. So the point is that Krishna wants us to act in a way that is anukul for our bhakti. Anukulya sankalpo yasya varjanam. So whatever is anukul, we have to accept. Whatever is pratikul, we should give up. So this is very important, actually. So that and tolerance. So sometimes we may somehow tolerate, but our whole mental thing goes in tolerating. I will somehow take it, even though I am feeling tortured, but I will tolerate. But my mind is completely thinking about tolerating, and I am not at all able to think about Krishna. I am not able to focus on my chanting. I am not able to focus on my hearing. I am not able to focus on deity worship. But somehow I am tolerating. I am tolerating at the cost of my spiritual practices. Does Krishna want someone to tolerate like that? No. So Krishna wants one to respond in a graceful way so that that person's spiritual life is saved. Make wise choice. Wise choice means that which is favorable for my Krishna consciousness. That is wise choice. So that is what Krishna wants me to do. So that's why we have to understand. Many times in the name of tolerating, we may end up tolerating at the cost of our spiritual life. Krishna does not want us to do that. So here, responding to the situation that Krishna puts us, that response means understanding our level of advancement and doing whatever is anukul for our bhakti and rejecting a response which is pratikul for our bhakti. Anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam. That is our guiding light. Sometimes in aggressively tolerating, we may if we have to sort of compromise our spiritual practices, then that kind of tolerance Krishna is not expecting from us. So it is all very circumstantial, but the guiding principle should be that is my response anukul for my bhakti or is it pratikul for my bhakti? There is no doubt about whether Krishna has put us in this situation or not. But the point is whether my response is anukul for my bhakti or pratikul for my bhakti. That is the most important. Yes, Krishna.
One devotee actually asked me that he has a struggle with his wife. Every day there is a fight, day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And he is not able to find a solution. Whatever he does, he picks up a fight. And he is not able to focus on his Krishna consciousness. So he is actually in a very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. So how to give a solution for such a situation? Is it that he should divorce his wife and go away somewhere?
Well, again, there are, I have given one parameter to both. There are multiple parameters involved. So when it is a family, one cannot consider just one's own devotional service alone. One has to consider multiple parameters. So you have mentioned one parameter, but I cannot give a holistic answer to this. We have to consider all the parameters and see the cause of fighting and kind of mistake. Is it a solvable problem or not? Who are the other parties involved? Are there children involved? And so many other things actually. So it is not an easy question. It is a much more complex question, and it's much more data to actually properly analyze the situation. So I will choose not to answer this question like that. But then one has to consider many further parameters to and
requires a detailed
favorable and proper guidance and do it. So I mean, of course, this is not a problem solving session in one sense, like to solve individual issues, but definitely the principle is kulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. But the application of that principle also cannot be short-sighted. It has to be the one should take proper guidance to understand a far-sighted application of this principle of anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam for actually long-term benefit of multiple people's devotional lives, actually. So in 10 minutes, you know, neither can you rate all the details, nor am I qualified to, you know, comment on such a thing. So, but the principle is, actually every principle, whether it is a principle of dharma or it's a principle of bhakti, any principle comes alive when there are, actually very elevated personalities who actually shine light on the practical application of that principle according to particular situations. Yeah. That's why Mahajano Yena Gatastha Panta. So therefore you need live Mahajana actually to see which principle takes the back seat and which principle comes to the forefront. So these are like that is why that comes with the decades of sincere practice and the purification and the empowerment actually. So therefore the guidance of a live acharya is very indispensable when it comes. The more complex the problem becomes, the more advanced the presence of an advanced devotee's guidance becomes very indispensable actually. Is it okay, Prabhu? Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay, there is one question in the chat box. Please elaborate what you mean by if you go back home prematurely, you will suffer. How can one go back home prematurely? No one can go before being perfect, right? Yeah, of course, that's what I meant. So if we go back home prematurely means without purifying ourselves of all our selfish desires, motives, etc. If we go there, and in the spiritual world, if everyone is serving Krishna only, and we have reached there with all our material, this is a hypothetical situation, this will never happen. So then we will suffer actually, like when Durvasa Muni, who reached Vaikuntha. So Vaikuntha is supposed to be the place which is completely free of anxiety. But Vaikuntha was the place when where actually Durvasa Muni was in maximum anxiety. So that is the point. Of course, it's a very unique case. This was orchestrated again by Krishna. Krishna allowed Durvasa Muni to reach Vaikuntha because he had planned to extol the glories of Ambarish Maharaj. So in order to accomplish that and in order to make it all the more dramatic so that, you know, the glories of devotional service and the glories of Ambarish Maharaj comes out so powerfully and perfectly, Krishna allowed Durvasa Muni to reach Vaikuntha, even though he had no qualification. So, but even though it's supposed to be the place where there is absolutely no anxiety, but because Durvasa Muni did not have the qualification to come there, he was in so much anxiety. So, these places are free of anxiety, not because of the nature of the place alone, not necessarily because of the nature of the place, but it is because of the nature of the people who are allowed entrance into that place. So that's why freedom from anxiety is not intrinsic to Vaikuntha. It is intrinsic to the people who are allowed entrance into Vaikuntha. They have nothing to do with this material world, nothing to do with material accomplishments. They are completely detached from birth and death and opulence and fame, accomplishments, ambition, etc. So such people, they care about Krishna. So such people have entrance. So that freedom from anxiety is not intrinsic to that place, but it is intrinsic to the people who are allowed there. And sometimes, like in the case of people like Durvasa Muni, when they are allowed entrance there, he was in maximum anxiety of all the places. When Lord Narayana said, "I am sorry, I can't do anything," so. And Sudarshan Chakra was behind him. And he thought of all the people, if there is someone who could help me, it is Lord Narayana. But when Lord Narayana said, "I can't," the only person who can help you is Ambarish Maharaj. So back to square one. So he had to, wherever he started his journey, he had to run back there. So yeah, generally it does not happen. No one will. That was a very hypothetical situation that I had mentioned, that if one goes back prematurely, he will suffer. The fact is, no one goes there prematurely. Okay. Any final comments, questions? We have just 5 minutes left. I don't wish to start the next essay in the next 5 minutes. But if there are any comments, questions before we wind up, we can take maybe one or two. If there is none, we will end our discussion here. So, thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. So, hoping to have your association again next Wednesday. The next Wednesday we can definitely have. But the Wednesday after, traveling to Vrindavan, so we may not have. But definitely next Wednesday we have. We will start discussing on the 10th essay, Tattat Karma Pravartanat. So we will discuss that. We'll start discussing on that next week. So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki jai, Srila Shri Bhakti Aloka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. You all have a pleasant week ahead and the weekend ahead. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.